Today on Open Kwong Door, Elva Stoiko, Part 2. Okay. Okay, it's rolling.
It's rolling, people.
I got nothing. I don't know what to say.
Welcome to Open... Oh, I'll start that one again. Okay, Paul, here we are. And you know what's really exciting about the upcoming episode with Elva Stoiko? First of all, he and I had a very lengthy conversation when we were together at a show in Peterborough. And I had been looking forward to talking to him for a year, if you can believe it. Mm-hmm. We started this conversation a year ago. He was coming to some very interesting ideas, I thought, about sport and where figure skating falls into sport or not sport. So he goes into this in some detail in this episode. I think it's going to be interesting for people to hear.
Yes, and I think it's a good discussion to have, because there have been a lot of changes going on in the last 10 years and so in the sport, but I'm just not sure about all, like, having to go, people want to go back to the old system. I just don't know if I necessarily totally agree with that, just because the old system was around for a good 100 years, and it was flawed in the way that it sort of judged things, and it was very subjective, and they're trying to change that. But this new system, it's changed a lot over the last 10 years, but it's still changing and it's still sort of evolving. So I think we just need to give it a little bit of a chance just to see.
Well, I think that the conversation that we had was two parts. First of all, the idea that figure skating is a subjective sport doesn't matter which system you use. Mm-hmm. And that in Elvis's interpretation of sport, which I thought was fascinating, sport needs to be quantified and measured, which is difficult to do in a subjective sport. So if you take sports that are run by stopwatches, you can clearly see who's the winner and who's the loser. When you've got sports that are judged, so synchronized swimming, boxing, equestrian, to some extent, I guess. No, maybe not. Dressage, well, maybe? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Because in a way that there still are judges in a lot of these sports in different ways.
Yes. Like the, and hockey and soccer and lots of them. Football?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So there's just rules and everything. So, I mean, obviously, figure skating there is a lot of subjectivity to it, and that's, but in a way that's kind of been the discussion or the argument about it forever, is that is it artistic and creative and all of that stuff, or is it a sport? That's sort of the two things that it, you know, combines together. So,
well, and what I did appreciate while we were talking about it, and of course the listeners are going to be make the judgment for themselves, but what I did appreciate is that he never once said that it wasn't athletic and that it wasn't difficult. Mm-hmm. But just that maybe we need to be developing a different category of competition, so that sports end up in one area of athleticism, and other athletic endeavors like figure skating, like lots of other things, I guess, would end up in a different area. Mm. Anyway, it was a fascinating discussion for me. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, Elva Stoiko. So let's talk about skating in broad strokes at the moment. You and I had a conversation a year ago, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast. And you talked to me about your idea of what sport is. So can you tell me a little bit more again about what you feel sport is and what it isn't.
Sport, well, sport is a physical activity that you, sport now, it's about measuring. You want to be able to measure something.
Yep.
And either you're measuring yourself by, you measure yourself against someone else, or measure it by some form of...
Like a standard, like
a
time
standard,
or whatever.
Time or, you know, height or whatever. And that... quantifiable. It can be quantifiable.
Okay.
And I think that that's what skating has been trying to do, but, you know, the new system, well, I can't call it the new system, it's system for a while
it's
now.
It's the system now.
There's some great things about it.
Okay.
You know, and they've been developing it, which is, and of course it was in infancy and people stabbed at. I stabbed it like crazy because, I mean, we've lost a lot of audience. You know, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, and I knew that was going to happen. And you know, sport to me is something that you should be able to quantify. You can measure it. You can measure it. And it's a physical thing. And then from that point, when you become so good at it, it becomes an art form. It's like looking at Michael Jordan or Wayne Gretzky. They don't just do their sport. It's you watch them and it's an art form.
Yeah, they elevate it.
Yeah, so, they elevate it, right? And that's where it becomes. You know, guys like Ayrton Senna, you know, God rest his soul. Like, that guy was incredible. You know, he was a lot of people don't know that if they look up and watch the movie Senna, he was one of the greatest F1 drivers that ever sat in a car. You know, and it's people like that that sort of elevate their sport, and not just elevate their sport, but they inspire people in all walks of life because they reach out to other areas of life and they inspire people.
So when you and I were talking a couple of years ago, you sounded a little bit more at the time that you weren't sure that skating qualified as a sport. Have you come back around a little bit, or what do you think?
I still don't think it sits in the middle. I really don't think it's a sport that way, because you can't quantify it. You really can't quantify. You can quantify the jumps, and you can count spins.
Yeah.
But the rest, I mean, they can say, "Oh, edge quality." You can banter back and forth about edge quality.
It's very subjective in that way.
Yeah, you can banter back and forth about the quality of a movement. You can banter back and forth about artistically in a program, right down to the way someone moves or the way they interpret music. You know, it's like dance, like ballroom dancing. It's a competition.
Yep.
But to me, it's so hard to quantify it. It's subjective. That's not a sport. A sport is something that can be measured. And back in the day when sport, it was used for training for hunting. That's what it was for. They would train people for going to hunt and da-da-da-da-da. And that's a long time ago. Sport became a way for the athletic abilities of, it was males, and then eventually females could do it, and then it became entertainment, and then da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And then they started throwing all sorts of stuff in there. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is a sport, and that's a sport, and chess is a sport, and this, you know, like, there's some things that are games.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. You know, some things that are games, and some things that are sports. You know, sport, you have to have some level of athletic ability.
Yeah, athleticism.
Athleticism, so, sure. Endurance.
Yeah.
To be able to measure it in endurance. Concentration, and then a way to really quantify it. Literally quantify it and go boom, boom, boom.
Done.
Done, right? And there's always going to be discrepancies. Even in, say, hockey, they're going to have discrepancies on maybe a goal or offline or offside, sorry, offside, or... You know, there's going to be that discrepancy. It always will be, but at least it's quantifiable, generally speaking, right? You can still quantify it. Skating still sits in that middle ground, but what makes skating great is, and what the 6-0 system I love so much, is that people loved to banter and have controversy about who should have won.
True enough.
That's what made figure skating exciting for people to watch, because they could talk about it. They could talk about it. It wasn't like, they can talk about some great things that happened, great jumps, great artistry, great spins. They could talk about that stuff comparatively to a Super Bowl game. Look at that throw. Look at that catch. Look at that run. Look at that tackle. Those things. But then you look at it and you go, well, he should have won. No, he should have won. No, that team was better. No, that... And it was like, they should have got a 5-9. That bantering back and forth kept bringing people back to the sport, because they'd want to see their person that they supported go again in competition and then beat the other person that your friend or another person liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that created that. It was a positive bantering.
Like a community.
And a community that enjoyed the skating. And that made it fun for people, because it's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a physical, and I call it skating is entertainment. And it was great. It doesn't mean I'm not taking anything away that it's not physical. It's one of the hardest sports in the world. Figure skating is, absolutely, without a doubt.
And you've done a lot of them.
Yeah, I've done a lot of different sports. It is incredibly for endurance. It's crazy. The skill level, you have to have incredible talent. It's a very difficult activity to do.
You have to have it,
and you've got to have brains. Yeah. You've got to have brain. You can have all the talent in the world. If you can't compete, forget it. You go do shows. But when you look at skating, they can tell me all they want. It's a sport. I'm like, no, it's not. And I'll still sell it. And I can tell them because of what I've explained to you.
And the parameters that you've set for what you defines it for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean that you can't have a competition.
Doesn't mean it's not competitive or not athletic. It just doesn't
fall within that criteria.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know, and it has its own place. But what makes it special is that people get a chance to banter back and forth. Now, with the system now, you've cut that off completely because now they went too far with it. Now you don't know the judges from what countries. So just completely, they didn't want any, they wanted to get rid of all the controversy and everyone from talking. So now no one has anything to talk about because it's so complicated. You know, they're getting new communiques about constantly revising or explanations on the explanations of the explanation of what they're trying to clarify on, right? Clarifications of the explanation. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a coach. And now it's just a number. A number comes up, ooh, the best, you know, season's best. But people are like, they talk about it, but it's not what it used to be like. That's why people used to jump on the bandwagon with their favorite skater because they wanted their favorite skater to beat their friend's favorite skater.
Yeah.
And that's what created the camaraderie in skating and made it popular. That type of thing. And that's where the personalities came out. You've got the Todd Eldridges and the Kurt Brownings and the Elvis Stoikos and the Philippe Candeloros and the Brian Orsers, the Boitanos, and it created that. The sport now, yeah, we have characters, but the system just doesn't allow for the people, the fans, to really sink their teeth into it and get involved. The other system used to do that. Yeah, it had faults. Of course, it always will. Every sport has faults. They're always changing rules. But when you completely throw the baby with the bathwater and start completely fresh, you're showing the world that you were wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what they did when they completely said, you know what, we're wrong. Everyone else was right, and all the fans were right, and we were wrong, and we will just change it all. So everyone goes, okay, we lost respect for your sport, and boom, and then they moved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. You know?
Do you know what's so interesting in today's day and age with everything is the whole possibility of interactivity and engagement with fans.
Mm.
So you had somebody writing you a letter back then. Actually, did you used to get letters?
All the time. I used to get a ton of fan mail.
And what did you do with them?
My mom used to, I was so busy with stuff, my mom used to open them up and some of them, if they were just an autograph, she would put them off to the side and separate the ones that just wanted autographs. So I had personalized all the names and I'd sign like a whole bunch of the pictures, hand signed everything myself, put on the names. Then if there were special ones that asked for special requests or things like that, there was another, and then some of really, really specific ones that, you know, whether it be my grandmother loves you and she's dying and da 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 da. I try to, whatever I could do, I would try to help out. And it was tough at the time, but we used to get a ton of fan mail.
Did those requests feel like a burden?
Like
were they, when you heard that somebody's grandmother, somebody's little boy, somebody's little girl is ill and the only thing they want to do is meet you, and you know what's going to be a 3-hour chunk out of your day minimum to get from Richmond Hill to it, you're a compassionate person.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you hold on to that kind of stuff?
I was one of those guys who was very guilty was my thing. I was always guilty for everything. I
felt guilty,
yeah, because you know, couldn't do something or couldn't help somebody or couldn't. I was always giving, and that's why I learned later on that I couldn't do that. I had to learn the difference between sympathy and empathy. There's a big difference between those two, and I learned that I can't be empathetic because once I do that, I take on that energy and then it screws me up. I had to become sympathetic to it, and I'm only one person. I can only do what I can do.
Right.
Right, and people have to understand that. So when I got involved with Ronald McDonald's Children's Charities, that gave me a chance to kind of channel that to go, okay, here's my place to get contribution.
Yeah.
And there was the time, I mean, I went to go see a little girl that was dying and her dream was to meet me. And I didn't want any media to know at the time. And I went with one of the ladies that was working with the foundation and I went to her house, just me, went to meet her.
Did it break your heart?
No, it didn't break. Yeah, it makes you sad, but there is always a path that, you know, I didn't create the problem, but at least I could have been there to bring some sunshine to that little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent like an hour and a half with her. She showed me her bottle cap collection, her button collection. And her mom was like, I haven't seen her smile in like a year. And she said she almost jumped out of the bed. She hasn't moved in like, you know, 4 or 5 months. And she was up and sitting. And, you know, that girl passed on. But at least I connected with her and...
Made a difference.
You know what I mean? And not feel sorry for her, because she didn't want me to come there to be sorry for her. She wanted me to come there to meet her,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to be there with her. And that's what I did. I sent her good energy. Why go there with the down energy? No, I'll be there for her.
So tell me, when you receive all the fan letters, are they all requests, or were there ever any letters aside from saying you're an idiot, which was that one guy, you can't skate and you have to do martial arts or whatever the guy
said.
Were there ever any letters that said, you know, thank you for what you do. Thank you for, we're proud of you as Canadians. Like,
yeah.
Those letters as well.
Oh, there was a ton of them that people didn't ask me for anything. They just wanted to. I got a lot of letters saying from people going, you know, I never write to anyone, but I wanted to write to you because you moved me. You touched me with your skating. I don't know what it is, but, and I don't watch skating, but I watched you. And for some reason, you changed my life. And I want to thank you. 1998 was a big one after my injury in skating at Olympics. I got a lot of letters from people that had different illnesses or gone through a very difficult time, a trial by fire in some sort. And they were wanting to give up. And they were like, you know what, you've spurred me on. And then I might get a letter from that same person years later saying, thank you, I got through it.
Wow.
You know, and... It was amazing, because you don't realize how many people you end up, the lives that you touch, you know. When I watch different athletes and other people that have done great things, and you see them on TV, I get touched by that too, you know, or you connect with them. So I'm like, well, I'm kind of doing the same thing, and I'm able to, you know, connect with people when I'm putting my heart and soul in figure skating, what I love to do and my activity. You know, there's going to be a point where you're going to touch people. You're going to touch lives, right?
Hopefully, if you
do
it right.
Yeah, if you do, yeah, of course.
Sure.
Yeah.
So do you believe that you have a purpose? Are you, you're a very deep thinker. You're somebody, and I don't know that people know that about you. I think that people sometimes think about people in a very superficial way. Oh, you know, there's a performer, there's a jumper, there's a whatever. Mm. But what they don't realize is that you really think about deep things. Like we were talking before the microphone started about you're into driving right now. We were talking about the accident that you had and the fact that you felt that it served a higher purpose.
Of course.
So do you feel that about yourself?
Absolutely. I think everyone has a purpose, and the purpose of life is trying to figure out what that purpose is.
Have you figured it out?
I think so. I think I have. And the thing is, I can't share that with you.
No, that's fine.
But I know what it is. And
When did you arrive at it? Like, at what age?
Probably in my mid-30s.
Took a while.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Some people takes maybe a shorter period of time. Other people may take longer. I had an interesting conversation with Kurt Browning a number of years ago.
Who? No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Who's that? Yeah. Kurt. And it's funny, later on in life, you learn to respect even more the person, you know, and Kurt's such a great guy. And he said to me once, it was really funny, and he goes, you know what, Elvis? He says, you're not a figure skater. And I looked at him. I was like, oh, what is he going to say? And he goes, you're a guy that skates. And I'm like, yeah, I know.
Hmm.
And I look at it that way because skating is what I do. It's not who I am.
That's beautifully put.
Skating is what I do. It's not who I am.
Actually, skating is one of the things you do.
Yeah, it's
among many.
Yeah. It's one of the things I do. People know me for that. My dad was a singer, and I do sing, and I can sing. And if I spent more time on it, I could be better at it. And of course, if you spend time on something, you're going to get better at it. My passion and my love is motorsports, and I've always had a love for motorsports, always had love for speed and power. So that obviously translated in my skating, because people remember me for that. But for me, it's just experiencing life that is the real thing, is the real thing. And the big thing that I learned over the last number of years, it's not about how much money you put in your bank account. It's about what you can experience in life, and don't be afraid to go out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
That is the key to happiness in life. And if you let go and you commit, close your eyes and jump off the bridge and just commit to it. Commit to life. That's what it feels like. Your truth will reveal itself to you,
mm-hmm.
once you can let go, and fear will no longer hold you back, and the universe will then start helping you. It starts to give you answers. You'll start to read things. There's that synchronicity that, mm-hmm. people talk about. People are, you know, they're doing more of the yoga thing and the energy and da 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 da. But right down to it, it's about letting go. It's like, if you want to go see the world, you've got to take your foot off the dock to get in the boat, or you're going to split your pants, right? You've got to get out, yeah. of the harbor,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to go out there where you can't see anything except the water and the horizon. You've got to trust your instinct that you're going to find something. Get rid of the fear and go for it. That's where the adventure is. And that, to me, once I got to a point where I could let go of skating,
mm-hmm.
and I let go of it completely, I came back to it, but I come back to it in a completely different way. And that was the 3 years when I was off doing my own thing from 06 to 09. Then when I came back, I came back with a completely different outlook on life and knew my purpose. But along that way, it was like letting go of fear and living truth, you know, and being able to speak my mind and just go, boom, 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 this is how I feel. And I love that, because you're free.
So how does being a husband impact, or how did becoming a husband impact all of these things that you think about in your life?
Well, I think...
the beautiful Gladys Orozco.
Yeah, Gladys is awesome. I met her when I was... Actually, I met her like in 2000, but we were...
Four continents.
Yeah,
I know her from there too.
Yeah, and but we weren't ready for that at the time, but we met, you know, obviously later, and I met her at 38 years old. And at that age, I knew what I wanted, and that's when I figured out about, got rid of the fear and started really experiencing, really taking a chance on life. That's when she walked into my life, and that's when I was like, yeah, I knew that.
Of course,
because you're ready for it, right?
Yeah.
And. To me, it's letting go of those things, and with Gladys, I learn stuff every day with her, and always be open and learn more about her, more and more about how she is, and you evolve. You're never going to be the same. You always want change, and this is something that the true one of the true secrets to life is that, you know, some people are afraid of change. But to be truly grounded in life, you have to be okay with constant change.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you will be grounded. When there's constant change, that's when you will be totally free and at peace. When you're locked into one place and you can't change, everything around you is pushing and you are like stuck in one position. And that's when your life is not fluid. And I learned that to be allow that to change. When things come, take them as they come. Look at them. Okay, I don't need this. I want that. And be okay with the change. Even if at times the energy is going to feel weird or awkward, let it go through. Learn from it. And then it'll go past you even quicker.
Yeah.
You'll get rid of it.
Because you're not resisting.
Yeah, you're not resisting. Be like water. It's like Bruce always said, you know, be like water, my friend. If you pour it into a cup, it becomes a cup. You know, you pour it into a teapot, it becomes the teapot. If you pour it on an angle on a ground, it finds the path of least resistance. You know, and it finds its way, and that's how you have to be, like water. You know, it's like if you're something very stiff, you're gonna break. Eventually, mm-hmm. you're going to break. There's something that's gonna be stronger than you, and you are going to break. And you want to be bamboo in the wind. You want to be flexible that way, but still have strength.
Yeah, strength and flexibility are
an
amazing combination. Okay, three quick things. Moment, professional, personal, whatever, where you've been the most proud.
Wow. Been the most proud.
I stumped him, people. How about that?
Wow. There's a couple of moments, I think. After 94 Olympics, and everyone was talking about, it was a combination of 92 and 94, where, you know, there was controversy and saying, oh, you should have won, you know, and the way I handled it, not that I was only, at the one time I was 19, then I was 21, but I handled it really well. I look back on it now, and I was like, I handled that really well.
Makes you proud.
Yeah, I handled that really well. Another one was in Vancouver Olympics when I rode for Yahoo. And
you stirred some pots there,
Mister. Yeah, I stirred some pots. And it was funny because I got the email from my editor and my boss, and he goes, that was awesome. He goes, this is the type of stuff that we expect from our writers. This was great, blah, blah, boom. And Glenn was calling me. He's like, oh my God, dude, the stir the pot. I love it, man. That was awesome.
Well, that's what I mean about, you know, that honesty and authenticity. Yeah, good for you.
Yeah. And I was very proud of it because I said it with emotion, but it wasn't so much I was like angry, but I was like passionate about what I was saying. And I wrote it that way. I said, you know what? It's not going to make any impact if I just write it with no emotion. I said, I need to put emotion into what I'm writing and translate that on paper, just like they were right in front of me when I said it. And that's why it went around the world. I couldn't believe it.
It was wild.
It was I couldn't believe it. It was the second highest rated article. And it blew my mind. And I was like, that was awesome. And I hit some nerves. And yeah, I pissed some people off, but too bad. I've been pissed off too, and I get over it. But it was interesting. And there was like, and the way I handled that whole situation, some people couldn't look me in the face. It was so funny. And there was Canadian writer wrote an article, and he just wrote a ridiculous article. He started taking pot shots at me at the way I looked and the way I skate. I'm like, what's that got to do with
your opinion?
He basically had no ammunition. So it basically was being an idiot when he wrote it. He goes, I have no ammunition, so I'm just going to write this, right? And I confronted him. And he was all like nervous. I confronted him in the media office, and I walked right up to the guy, and I went, you know what, your article? I said, that wasn't cool, man. What was that about? He was all, he didn't know what to say, because I faced him, and he was like, oh, and I said, that article was like so uncalled for. What are you stupid? Like, come on, man. Like, if you're going to use some stuff, have some ammunition if you're going to write. You had no ammunition. You made no point.
So now you say, my mother dresses me and I look funny? Like, yeah, what are you saying? Like, yeah, what is that?
It's got nothing to do with what
it's
I wrote.
What he said, but I just came
he
up
couldn't,
with that.
Yeah, he couldn't defend. He couldn't have a rebuttal on what I wrote. That's what pissed most people off. They couldn't rebuttal it. They just kept saying the same thing. Oh, he's wrong because it's not figure jumping. I'm like, how many times am I going to say that, right? And it was so funny because I kept having interviews, but people, they don't listen.
Yes,
I go,
that's true.
Lysacek is a great skater.
You're not taking anything away from him.
Exactly. Patrick Chan is a great skater. I'm talking about the competition. You know, if you're going to make it a sport, it's got to have these criterias. You don't go backwards. You go forwards, right? And they say, well, artistically it went forward with his skating. And I'm like, not that much compared to the other skaters. You know, and that's where it was, and I hit it right on the head. That's why it made such a stir. If I was completely wrong, people wouldn't have that type of reaction. They'd be like, whatever, he doesn't know what he's talking about, and then they would just go on. But because I hit a nerve, and it was truth, that's why it made such a stir. And then I was very proud of that. That was a big thing. And then I was worried for a little bit. I was kind of worried. I was like, I wonder what's gonna happen after. Huh? People forgot about it. Most people after that, 80-90% of the people came up and went, you know what? Love that article. Maybe some people didn't agree, but you know what? You spoke from the heart with emotion, truth, loved it. Awesome.
See, this is what I was just saying, and this is why I've always liked talking to you. As I said, nobody has to agree with anybody. It's the fact that you're not willing, you won't back away from a reasonable question. Mm. And I love that.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing I hate more than somebody who does commentary on anything, but actually isn't willing to stake their neck out and say, you know what, I think A, not B, and C is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I want people to give me opinion. I can deal with strong opinions all day long. I have a much harder time dealing with wishy-washy.
Oh, for sure. Because
you'd be crazy.
And how can you trust someone like that?
I can't.
How can you trust someone like that?
Right? Tell me where you stand.
Yeah, just show yourself and be truthful up front, you know? I look at guys going into the Olympics in 1 year, and look at how many guys are doing 2 to 3 quads.
It's pretty exciting.
It's awesome. It's getting exciting again with that. And
do you think we can do quad-quad combinations? What do you think?
For sure. There are days when I practice, and I know it can be done because I felt it myself on those days where it was just awesome. You know, and now the training is even further. They have more advanced training for off ice. There's more knowledge, and there's things that they have. So of course it's going to evolve. So I think it's there, and I think there's room for 5. I think there's room for other quads. They're doing the quad sal and quad toe on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's like no big deal anymore.
It's making a difference. You know,
it is a big deal, of course.
It's very difficult to do, right? But then you know, people say, well, it's hard on the bones. I'm like, well, look at football. These guys are getting destroyed out there. But then you improve equipment, you improve the training, you get stronger, and that's what sport is about. Is about moving forward, right? And that's why I always tried to push that aspect of our activity, of our physical activity, to push forward. You know what I mean? Our competitive, you know,
athleticism
out there. You know what I mean? And I want to be able to push that and make sure that stays. Because once that goes, then you lose it.
Okay, so moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about you. What's next for you?
Oh, geez. I'm really loving the racing. I'm loving it. I'm really embracing it, and it's and the community has really embraced me. You know, whether it be the Elvis Stoico thing, but they seeing that I have talent in it, and mm-hmm. they were like, you know what, you can do well with it, and I want to promote sport. I want to promote the racing and use my celebrity to help promote karting, help promote car racing and you know, continue that tradition. Because we've always had great talent in Canada for racing. And to be able to, you know, maybe get even more sponsorship involved and build it and create that. And, you know, I just love technology. I love motors. I love motorsports in general. And it's just exciting to me. I understand. I love that becoming one with the machine, understanding it, understanding the physics of it. I'm fascinated by it. I don't just sit in the cart and go. I like to learn about the different things in the cart. My mechanic will work and say, okay, I've changed something on the cart, but I'm not going to tell you. I want you to go out, do 5 laps and tell me what I changed. And I come in and I tell him, and he goes, that's good.
Wow.
Next. And that's how, and I love that. I love that. And to experience that. And it's not about winning a kart race, just being in the thick of things and experiencing and the strategy involved in passing and when to pass and when to defend and all these things. I love it. And it's just so awesome. And then that's where I'm at right now. I'm just enjoying that.
So if people wanted to find out more about kart racing, is there a website that they can go to?
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. I mean, in Canada right now, the big thing is the Rotax series. And the people that have helped me so much, I mean, Michel Bosclair from Quebec, SRA Racing, he was able to get me a motor last year for the DD2 series, which is called Direct Drive 2. It's a type of one of the classes that I race in. And then Daniel and Marco DeLeo, they run the Goodwood track just outside of Stouffville, and they gave me a track time. They hooked me up with the chassis, and they really supported me last year to help me out.
Which, by the way, I found out means kind of the frame, people, because I wasn't sure.
Yeah, the frame. Yeah, the chassis is the frame, and then there's the motor, right? And different chassis manufacturers, most of them are produced in Italy. A guy that I worked with last year, Paolo Solaroli, he was my mechanic.
That's a great name. I'd love to say that as an announcer.
But and actually, for tomorrow night, his wife and 2 kids are coming. He can't make it, but they're coming to watch the show. And he's been friends. His brother Al had worked with me for years on my cars, souped them up and stuff, a mechanic. And then my mechanic that's working with me now, Daryl Timmers, he's coming tomorrow night with some family and stuff. And they've all helped me last year. And it's been a really great experience and another group, another family that I'm part of, and I fit. And I'll be honest with you. I'll be really honest. I fit better in that aspect, in that family, than my other family in skating.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I have friends in skating. I always will, and I have great, and I connect with all of them. But in this, I fit right in.
So you feel at home?
Yeah.
Right off the top.
Yeah, right off the top. I felt right at home right away. And it wasn't that, oh, you're Elvis Stoico and they're going to like you. No, it's not it. It's the conversation you have with someone when you sit down and talk about the racing and the and this and that and the sport itself. You get involved. It's just felt very at home.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So the fear is gone. Mm-hmm. Fear has no place in your world.
Yeah.
Give me three adjectives that define you.
Three adjectives that define me. Okay. How would I say as an adjective?
Or three to words.
To describe, three words. Yeah, three. I don't want to say the word truthful. I want to say the word truth.
Okay.
Okay. Truth. The second word I would have to say is potential.
Okay.
Limitless potential. And I would have said freedom, but that's limitless potential as well. There's a freedom to that. And I think the third one, trying to find a word that would encompass to know oneself, to be one with oneself, to be grounded, but there's a word that escapes me at the moment.
Like a self-awareness kind of quality?
Yeah, it'd be like to be aware of me and to have a respect for it, a respect for myself, a love for myself, to understand who I am, and it's like I said, it's an awareness.
Three things that people would be surprised to learn about you.
Oh, that's a tough one because I don't know what they know. You know, like it's oh, here, I'll tell. Okay. A lot of people didn't know know what I think about this anyways is I never thought of myself as having talent in skating.
Come on, seriously?
Yeah. I always thought my talent was not the skating. My talent was my ability to think, comprehend, and then problem solve. And be relentless in defining the answer.
You are a relentless person.
Yeah, that was my talent. I believe I have more talent for motorsports than I ever did with skating. Wow. I find it come more natural to me.
Look out, motorsports people. You're in for a tough ride.
We'll have to see. But I know that some people are like, yeah, we see you already moving. It's just the way I approach it. Well, what I have in spades now is I have a formula on how to do it. Like, I've already done it in skating. Right, I just need the track time.
I just need the
laps, the seat time, and practice. And I know I have it within me. So it's just the confidence to know that I have that ability, right? And to experience. And yeah, I'm not going to win every race. It might take me a while before I make the world team, but it doesn't matter. I know it's possible, and I just love the journey. It's always about the journey, not the. You know, there's a movie. I love this movie. I hope people get a chance. They might have seen it. It's called The Peaceful Warrior.
I've heard of it.
Phenomenal movie. Phenomenal movie. I have friends, close friends, or other friends that have come in through my wife, and they come to me for advice. They just sort of latch on and go, "Can you help me?" Because I have the ability to kind of see through things and be honest with them, right? And they like that. And I always put that movie in. I just watch this. And like, why? Just watch this movie, and they'd be like, "Oh, I get it now." And I'm not going to say much about it. Just go see The Peaceful Warrior.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about a gymnast. It's based on a true story about a gymnast.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to write it down, actually.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I think the three things that I would say that people would be surprised to learn about you is, one, you are a very complex man.
Yeah, I'm not very simple that way.
No, and that's one of the things that is kind of interesting because it's always wonderful to sort of not exactly know where a conversation is going to go and yet know that there's possibilities to discuss just about anything.
Yeah.
So the fact that you think about things, I think, I don't know that people know that. I know that they know that you're a strong athlete, but I don't know that they know that it's not just about mentally being tough and being able to compete. It's about all of the complexities of all of the things you think about. So I think that your complexity, I think people would be surprised at. I think your sense of humor and the fact that you can tie a tie really fast, as we saw in the...
I learned that from my dad. He showed me twice, and I've had it since. I used to tie ties all the time for school and high school. So
I have to tell everybody, we were watching. I was waiting for the finale. I'm the co-host of the show, and Elvis is the only one that had his tie tied correctly and quickly. All the other men were sort of like trying to figure out, what do we do here? Anyway, I thought it was quite hilarious.
They're all hoping to have a clip on. Oh, jeez.
Anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. You are a treasure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Again, Paul, we're back. Elvis Stoiko, complex man, thoughtful man, and I just really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah, you know what came out with me is that he was joking around. He was telling some good stories that were funny, and he always was so intense when you saw him skating that side of him, it kind of didn't come out, because I guess, you know, that's the way he was trained through his martial arts and a lot of that stuff that he brought to his skating. So a lot of times when you saw him, he was just very intense.
In the zone. Well, I have to say that, again, I appreciate his generosity. I appreciate the fact that he's there for his friends and he's there for the people in his life. That, to me, says a lot about who a person is. So, Elvis, I hope you'll talk to us again sometime.
So you can talk to us.
Us.
by going to our website, which is openkwangdoor.com, or you can...
You forgot, didn't you? You forgot.
I don't know what I was thinking about there. But, or you can go to Twitter at openkwangdoor, or email us contact@openkwangdoor.com.
We hope to hear from you.